Welcome to the Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, senior analyst for USCFootball.com. After a two-week hiatus, the Recruiting Rant Podcast is back to answer all your questions about USC football recruiting. Not a whole lot of news to report since our last podcast, although USC did receive commitment number 18 in the class of 2021 in the form of Prophet Brown, a 5'10", 180-pound four-star cornerback from Elk Grove, California, Monterey Trail High School. Brown is rated the 126th player overall nationally in the class of 2021, being the number 9 cornerback according to 24/7 Sports. USC currently sits number 6 nationally in the 24/7 Sports team composite recruiting rankings. They are number 2 in the Pac-12 behind Oregon, who is number 3 nationally in the composite rankings. However, it's worth adding that Oregon is actually ranked number 7 behind USC, who is number 6 nationally in the 24/7 Sports centric rankings. ESPN and Rivals must like Oregon's class a lot more than 24/7 Sports. The class of 2020 was also in the news last week for USC as Jack Yerry, a 6'6", 255-pound four-star tight end from Murrieta Valley High School, was deemed academically ineligible, according to sources. USC was only expected to take one tight end in the 2021 class. The Trojans currently have a commitment from Austin, Texas, Lake Travis three-star tight end Lake McCree. But with Yerry no longer enrolling and senior Daniel Imator-Bebe entering the transfer portal last week, USC may have to take more than one tight end in the 2021 recruiting cycle. With that said, we'll get into the Recruiting Rant podcast thread, where the questions are long-winded and the answers are a hurricane of insight, conjecture, and speculation. The first question comes from NJ Trojan, who asks a very simple and concise question: next commit, August. NJ Trojan follows up with another question, very concise: next decommit, August. Thank you for the question, NJ Trojan. The next question comes from Gate Call, who says, with the California high school football season moving to the spring, are there any commits slash recruits where you think the following: they might as well enroll early in college, or they definitely need to play their senior season to develop? Well, I think if you're worried about development, you're not going to get any better development than going straight to college, where you get a college weight training regimen and you get college off-season workout 3 months worth, plus you're also getting 15 practices of spring football. There's no guarantee there's going to be a high school football season. So even if there was one, I don't think from a development standpoint, considering a lot of these kids are going to be out of shape, they're not going to be weight training properly, get them straight to college, get them in a strength and conditioning program, and then get them an extra 15 college level practices. I don't think you can go wrong with that when you're looking at development. It doesn't matter if it's Monterey Day, Corona Centennial, IGM Academy, no high school in the country is going to have an off-season training program that will be at the level of USC. And in addition to that, none of those high schools are going to have the nutrition program that USC offers in the off-season as well, which is just as vital. The next question comes from Six Brave Bulls, who asks, with all of the changes going on, have you heard any big-time high school football coaches changing programs? Like, will some public school coaches move to private schools, parentheses, that may be semi-open? I haven't heard of any big moves coming down the pike, and I think considering that there's no revenue coming in right now, and even if there's a high school football season, let's say in January, you're probably going to have protocols which limit fan capacity, you're not going to sell a lot of merchandise, and it's going to be hard to get local businesses to get ad time. And so if they're not going to donate to those high school football programs, that's really going to hurt the bottom line. Now, in addition to that, you're paying high school football coaches right now to not coach, unless they're also PE teachers. But then at the same time, there's really no PE that's going to be on campus, and you can't really remotely coach physical education. So you're paying out coaches and you're not bringing any revenue in. I think it's very hard to justify making a big move, going out if you're a parochial school and trying to get a Matt Logan, or even being a parochial school and trying to make a lateral move with another coaching staff. Right now, the school districts, I assume, are under a hiring freeze. So I can't see, with no revenue coming in, somebody justifying going and making such a big move financially. The next question comes from Chris, who asks, any news on Rayshon Davis? What is the likelihood of landing Ethan Calvert. So two different linebackers here. We're talking about four-star Rayshon Davis from Mater Dei High School and Ethan Calvert, four-star linebacker from Oaks Christian High School. As we've been reporting with Calvert the last few weeks, it looks like it's really a battle between USC and UCLA. And I think USC is in a pretty good position in that battle. We anticipate a potential commitment in August, but now that Calvert wants to play his high school football season, that sort of shifts things a bit. Normally, during the fall, kids want to commit early before their senior season starts so they can focus specifically on football, on grades, and making sure they can be early entrants to the college of their choice. That's no longer on the table for Calvert, who won't be looking forward to his high school football season until January of next year. And because he is a full semester ahead academically, he might just use the fall to chill out, take some official visits, and not commit until February. Davis is really in the same boat because he also announced he wants to play his senior year of high school football. Now, listen, they could end up canceling the high school football season altogether by November. So both of these young men may still have the opportunity to sign early and enroll at the college of their choice in January. They may not commit early because they're going to want to use that time to see if there's going to be a high school football season. But at the end of the day, if that high school football season is canceled, which would probably come in late October, early November, then they can make that decision. Okay, I'm squared away academically. I can go ahead and graduate in December and enroll at the college of my choice in January. The next question comes from South Coast Trojan, who asked, could you elaborate on what went on behind the scenes with the recruitment of Prophet Brown and how it came to be for USC to get the commitment from him, which seemed out of nowhere? Also, did his commitment play a factor in the recent crystal balls for Isaiah Johnson to ASU? Love the rants. Thank you for all the hard work, GM. Last question first. Just before Isaiah Johnson, the 6'2", 185-pound cornerback, originally from Atlanta, Georgia, moved to West Virginia, played in West Virginia last year, and then moved out here to Los Angeles just recently. He put out a group of favorite schools, and just before that, he gave ASU a silent commitment. That leaked out. That's what prompted the crystal ball selections in ASU's favor. Has nothing to do with Prophet Brown. As for Brown's recruitment and commitment to USC, I really can't elaborate on that beyond what we've already reported. We have yet to get in contact with him directly. He's not one to do a lot of interviews, and he's been pretty quiet on the recruiting front when it comes to that. But talking to those close to him, it was revealed that USC had actually been recruiting him as a cornerback prospect the moment he got the scholarship offer. That came actually before Dante Williams was even hired on staff. Luckily for USC, Dante Williams already had a relationship with Prophet Brown when he was at Oregon, and being one of the best recruiters at that position just carried over to USC when he was recruiting him. So he had a very good relationship with the entire USC coaching staff. And then when you bring Dante Williams into the mix, that just gave them that little bit of an extra boost. The schools that were actually recruiting him as a running back, those schools were just trying to get some traction in his recruitment. They were basically recruiting towards his ego. They were talking to him about scoring touchdowns, winning Heisman trophies, etc. But his long-term potential, he felt, was best at cornerback. And although he hasn't played cornerback at the high school football level for Monterey Trail, he has played cornerback in the 7-on-7 circuit, and he feels that's going to be his best position at the college level. That obviously worked out well for USC because they have a bulldog recruiter at that position now in Dante Williams. Our next question comes from Green Trojan, who asks, will Quay Davis, the four-star wide receiver out of Skyline High School in Dallas, make it into this class? Simple answer, I don't think so. That's my prediction. The next question comes from Jacob Stein, who asked, first, on the 2020 O-line recruits, besides Jonah Monheim and possibly the two Texas freshmen, what is your evaluation of the other three players and were they reaches? I think there's an argument to be made that USC reached a bit in the 2020 class for offensive linemen. Andres Dorick is one of the offensive linemen that they signed in the class, and certainly one of those guys that has that offensive tackle frame. He's a really big 6'7", 300-plus pound offensive tackle. I guess the biggest question mark I would have with Dorick is his athleticism. He's a little bit heavy-legged, a little bit stiff. We saw him at the offensive line camp for USC, and he didn't necessarily perform very well when it came to mobility. And so that would be the biggest question I have for him as an offensive tackle, is his athleticism with his kick step and being able to take a speed rusher, someone who's, you know, 250 pounds, who's really explosive, and being able to kind of slow down those type of players off the edge. But like I said, he definitely has the wingspan and the frame that you want in an offensive tackle. Andrew Milik, I've never seen play in person, 6'6", 290 pounds. Again, on paper, has an offensive tackle frame. I think the thing with Milik that stood out to me is that he's not very dominant on film in that initial contact. He doesn't necessarily seem to really be able to physically dominate the players across from him. He tends to hand fight, grabs a little bit. He is fairly athletic. He does move off the line of scrimmage pretty well, but I don't know in terms of the strength and that overall dominance you want to see at the high school level against players that are clearly not as talented, not as physical. I didn't really get to see that much from his film, and I think that's why he wasn't necessarily a guy that was looked at really highly by the experts. Cade Steven, the 6'5", 295-pound offensive tackle from Washington, is probably the most dominant of the three on film. He does fire off the football. He does physically dominate at the point of attack. He has great punch. But the biggest issue with him is injuries. He hasn't been healthy a whole lot in his high school career, and he's dealing with a back injury, and sometimes back injuries are degenerative. So that's something that we just have to watch from him. And I think if he would have had a strong senior season, and if he would have played his whole senior season, there's potential that he ended up being a four-star recruit. I know Brandon Huffman, who is a national recruiting editor for 24/7 Sports, lives up in Washington, covers Washington for 24/7 Sports. He was pretty high on Cade Steven. He felt like at one point Cade Steven maybe was the best offensive line recruit that USC had in that committed class. So there's definitely some talent. There's some physicality. There's some nastiness and aggressiveness there. But can Cade Steven get healthy and stay healthy? Jacob Stein had a second question, which was, with the loss of Jack Yari, are we looking for a second tight end and anyone who has mutual interest that we are high on? Yeah, so let's talk about the tight end position. USC has one commitment in the 2021 class. That's from Lake McCree, 6'4", 220-pound, three-star tight end from Austin, Texas. They could take a second tight end in the class, and I think if Josh Fallow does enter the transfer portal, they're almost going to have to. USC definitely seems that they want to have the tight end position a part of their offensive scheme. This is not the Texas Tech, Washington State air raid offense that people are used to seeing and people know from the early 2000s. This is going to be a bit more of a pro-style offense that is going to use the shotgun, but they're going to use a lot of 11 personnel. I mean, almost half the snaps last year had a tight end on the field, and that tight end was Eric Cromenhoek, who's really more of a blocking tight end. So USC definitely wants to use the tight end position, and you look at some of the schools that have won the national championship and been a part of the college football playoff, all of those schools to some extent have used tight ends. You're talking about Clemson, you're talking about Alabama, and you're talking about LSU. So the tight end position is not being phased out. I wrote a little bit about this last week, and it was surprising to me how much the tight end position was used by those schools. Now, for USC, in terms of their options with the second tight end in the 2021 class, they are a bit limited. Terrence Ferguson, a 6'5", 225-pound tight end out of Littleton, Colorado, was a player that USC was really high on before they got the commitment of Lake McCree, and a player that I think they're still probably going to end up recruiting. He committed to Oregon, I think, last month. Another player that, interestingly enough, is not committed, and they actually offered just recently as a basketball player, so a two-sport player here, Michael Trigg, 6'4", 215-pound tight end out of Lake Wales, Florida. He's a four-star, and he's a player that USC obviously is pretty high on if they're offering him as a football player and a basketball player. And finally, Thomas Fedone, who's the number one ranked tight end in the nation, 6'5", 225 pounds out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. A player that you would think would end up going to Iowa automatically. Iowa's had a tremendous amount of success turning out NFL tight ends. But USC came in a little late with that scholarship offer, and you have to think that there's some type of mutual interest there. Otherwise, they'd really just be spinning their wheels. And USC hasn't done that at the tight end position. So for them to come in late, this is just a little bit of conjecture. I get the vibe that there's probably an official visit there coming for USC somewhere along the line. Fadone must have given them reason to start pursuing him. Not to say that they have a great shot at him, but he is a player I think that they feel they have some amount of traction with because they offered him right after they got the commitment from Lake McCree. The next question comes from Super Trojan 5, who asks, what happened in the recruitment of Jalen Ramsey? And did he actually mislead the USC coaching staff and players and that he was still committed when he was not solid? In your experience and opinion of watching prospects over your career, what is the best indicative of college-level projection of success when evaluating prospects for the recruiting rankings? Performance in high school games or performance in camps? Parentheses, Rising Stars, Nike, opening, or 7-on-7 events? So this is actually two questions. The first question about Jalen Ramsey, yeah, he misled USC towards the end of his recruitment. I know that he told USC that they were getting the last in-home visit, and that turned out not to be the case. I believe Florida actually ended up getting the last in-home visit. And there were a few different things that he and his family said to USC that weren't entirely true, and I think it gave USC a false sense that he was solidly commit and that they were going to be able to lock up his signature come signing day. As for the first question, football games trumps everything else. Football game tape trumps everything else. 7 days a week, twice on Sunday. The reason for that is you want to see not only a player when he has the ball in his hands or he's making the tackle or he's scoring a touchdown. You want to see that player away from the football as well. You want to see what their demeanor is, their mentality. You want to see their instincts. You want to see how they play every snap of the ball, and you want to see as many snaps as possible. So for me, watching a game or watching game film always trumps all those other events. The next question comes from Flash Brown 002, who says, hello, Jim. Is USC involved with NOAA? And I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce this last name. I've never spoken to this young man. Pulili? Noah Pulili? He looks quite the athletic offensive lineman, and his recruitment seems to be exploding. To my knowledge, USC is not involved, and I think that's mainly because Pulili is a guard prospect, and USC is really looking for offensive tackle bodies. 2021 class, they are specifically out there looking for height, frame, wingspan, players that can play the offensive tackle position, and Pulili is projected to play offensive guard. He's, I think, listed at 6'4". Heard he's probably 6'3", maybe 6'2". So from that standpoint, he's not going to be able to play offensive tackle. And that's what USC is looking for in this class. The next question comes from Trojan Tito 66, who asks, I read somewhere that Mason Murphy did really well in Utah at a lineman camp. Do you think he is a player that can rise up the rankings and become a 4-star? Mason Murphy, the 6'5", 295-pound offensive tackle commit from J. Sarah High School, I do believe that he can move up the rankings. I think that Mason Murphy has some physical maturity ahead of him, and I think he's got some good upside. He has a decent frame. He blocks really well away from the line of scrimmage. You watch him get to the second and even the third level of the defense. He's got good footwork, and he's got really good athleticism for a kid that's hovering around that 300-pound mark. So I do think he's a player that can move up the rankings. I also think he's a guy that's versatile enough that you can look at him as an offensive tackle prospect. But ultimately, with that athleticism and seeing him fire off the ball and get to the second level, you could maybe play him an offensive guard. I like athletic offensive guards when I'm pulling, when I know that they're going to be lead blockers and they're going to have to get to that second level of the defense, probably more often than your offensive tackles. The next question comes from BU for USC, who asks, if USC guaranteed that he would start as a true freshman, do you think that would be enough to sway Kingsley Suamataia to become a Trojan? I don't think it would be enough to sway him, and I don't think it would be a good precedent to guarantee any recruit that he's going to start as a true freshman. What you want to do is lay out the players in front of him, what he has to do to be a starter. And I think for USC, being that Suamataia is one of the top players in the Western region, the writing's on the wall. He'd be able to compete, and with the players that USC has, he definitely would have a shot to be a true freshman starter. But you don't want to guarantee him a starting job because then you sell out the other players that you recruited on your roster. And that's how you start to lose a locker room. The next question comes from Ali for USC, who who asks, with the sudden need for an additional tight end in the recruiting class, is USC looking at 6'7", 235-pound tight end Isaac Vaha out of Pleasant Grove, Utah? Seems like he has a great frame to put on weight and contribute at the tight end position or even grow into an offensive tackle. USC doesn't appear to be involved in his recruitment. I did take a peek at his film because I've never even heard of Vaha. I've never watched him and haven't followed his recruitment at all. He's not been a player that's come up in conversation with USC. But as you stated, USC's going to have to expand their tight end board a little bit more unless they feel that they have some confidence that they can get a player like Michael Trigg or maybe flip the commitment of Terrence Ferguson. Fadone, like I said, I think that's a long shot. Maybe USC gets an official visit, but getting a top tight end out of Iowa when USC only had 15 receptions combined from that position seems like a total fantasy. So I think they would probably have to expand the recruiting board a little bit at the tight end position. Perhaps Vaha is a guy that they look at. At 6'7", he's an angular receiver. He does have some good catches on his film. I think the thing that disappointed me the most, though, was his run blocking. He is 6'7", as I stated, and so it's probably hard for him to get low and to gain leverage at the line of scrimmage, but he's not overpowering a lot of those players at the line of scrimmage at the high school level. You would like to see him at that size be able to bully some of those defensive linemen and those linebackers a little more than he does on film. So projecting him as an offensive tackle is tough. 230 pounds, does have a great frame, but when you're watching him out there and he's not necessarily blowing guys off the ball, it kind of makes you wonder if he's got that mentality, that aggressiveness, and he's going to be able to have that physicality once he does put on the weight. That's a big time projection, and you really would want to look at him more as a tight end prospect. And again, decent receiver from what I saw, not the greatest, but the run blocking is a little bit of an issue in my opinion. The next question comes from P. Polly, who asks, is there a philosophical problem or difference between Hari? I guess you probably wrote this on your phone. Graham Harrell and Clay Helton on tight end utilization. Any info on whether we are close to landing a walk-on? I'm a little confused about the walk-on reference. I'm not sure if that's what you're actually asking, W/O. But in terms of philosophical differences between Clay Helton and Graham Harrell, I don't know of any. Clay Helton has utilized the tight end position before. And to my knowledge, Graham Harrell has said nothing to give you the implication that he doesn't want to use the tight end position, that he wants to go away from the tight end position. Certainly, he has played in offenses where they didn't use the tight end, and he's coached in offenses where they didn't utilize the tight end. But at this point, he's been pretty vocal about trying to continue to evolve the offense and seeing that tight end is going to be a part of that evolution going forward. Big Nick 21 USC asks, question for GM, if SC plays in the spring, would that help or hurt recruiting? The big time targets SC is after, or do you think they will go elsewhere, i.e. J.R. Corey Walden, etc.? J.R. Corey Walden. Well, Corey Foreman, JT Tuimoloau, and I don't know who Walden is. You guys got to tighten up on these questions a little bit. Learn these recruits' names. Get them right. Maybe do a little social media stalking like the Oregon fans. I don't think USC not having football during the fall hurts recruiting. If you're playing this season and it's pushed back and it goes into spring, we're assuming that recruiting ends in February. If the 2021 class carries over into the spring and the recruiting process itself is pushed back like the season would be pushed back for USC, that's really hard to project. It's hard to gauge how that would impact recruiting and whether it would hurt or help USC. I feel like the recruiting process is not going to be delayed. I think they'll figure out some type of protocol for the kids to be able to take their official visits. And I think a lot of those kids are going to end up signing during the early signing period. Under that scenario, I don't think a lack of a season, at least during the fall, is going to hurt USC recruiting. Big Nick follows up with a second question. He asks, if SC plays 10 Pac-12 games and goes 9-1 and get revenge versus Oregon in the Pac-12 title game and plays a well-played game in a quote-unquote New Year's Day bowl win or lose by 3, kind of close, like the 17 Rose Bowl, do they You're killing me here, Nick. Let me try to read this again. Okay, hold on. If SC plays 10 Pac-12 games and goes 9-1 and gets revenge versus Oregon in the Pac-12 title game and plays well in a New Year's Bowl game, win or lose by 3, close, kind of like the 17 Rose Bowl, do they finish strong in recruiting, getting the big-name kids listed above? How well can USC do in that situation? Yes, if USC only loses one game with that schedule and they beat Oregon, they do fantastic in recruiting. SCPA5 comes in with our next question. He asks, what's happening with this D-line class? SCPA5 coming in aggressive, throwing elbows in the lane. He wants to know, and he wants to know right now, what's happening with this DL class? All right, SCPA5, here's the plan. USC is going to take Jay Toya, who's going to be an early entrant. They're going to get Colin Mobley, who's already committed. They're going to try to make a run at JT Tuimoloau and get him away from Ohio State, Washington, and Oregon. And then they're going to get Aaron Armitage, who probably commits before September, but we're not 100% sure. He could prolong the process until he takes some official visits. That's plan A. And before the peristyle freaks out about Corey Foreman, we're looking at him as a hybrid rusher. So technically, he's a linebacker in this class. The next question comes from BetaTrojan64, who asks, any update on Kingsley Suamataia? Also, any chance we can get Dante Williams to recruit along the offensive line? Suamataia just recently put out a top 7 list, which included Arkansas, BYU, Oregon, USC, Utah, Utah State, and Virginia. There is potential that he could make a commitment within the next month, but a source told Blair and Gulo last week that that would only happen if he felt like there would be no official visits. I think there will be official visits for the recruiting process in the 21-21 class. We're just not necessarily sure when those are going to actually happen. But no official visits? I think there'll be official visits at some point. They could get pushed back, as we talked about earlier, to January into the spring. But I have a feeling they're going to come up with a solution here probably into late September into early October. Now, with Suamataia, in terms of the schools that are involved with him and the schools that have a good chance, he's really Oregon's to lose. USC is trying to pull off the upset here. As for Dante Williams recruiting the offensive line, I don't know that he recruited any offensive linemen at Oregon, and I don't think he's involved with any offensive linemen at USC. If you need your cornerbacks coach to recruit the offensive line, you've got issues. South Coast Trojan slides in with another question. He asks, in a recruiting rant last month, you stated USC has a lot going on behind the scenes with linebacker recruiting. And in this past week's War Room, you stated USC is in a good standing with highly rated linebackers, plural. Can you elaborate on possibly who, or maybe a new name for a new linebacker prospect they are recruiting, or an update on linebacker recruiting as a whole? I can only repeat what I've heard, which is linebacker recruiting is going very well for USC. I think USC is in a very good position to land Ethan Calvert. And you also have to look at Corey Foreman potentially being a linebacker in this class for USC, just because he could play that stand-up Jack B-backer position. He's really looked at maybe more as a linebacker than an actual defensive lineman. But yeah, I don't have a bunch of new names to throw at you. Obviously, if USC is moving away from Ma'a Nyotiote, then they must feel confident with some other players, because they definitely want to take 2, maybe 3 linebackers in this class. We've talked about them taking 4. I think that's kind of unlikely. But again, if it's the right players, I guess they'll stack up at whatever position, because you're talking about having 25-plus recruits in the 2021 class that are going to sign with USC. The next question comes from Tejas Pacific, who asks, if SC games are moved from the fall of 20 to the spring of 21, are early enrollees eligible to play? Would one of the quarterbacks, Anthony Beavers or Zamirian Gordon, see the field? Yeah, that's a great question. I can't see why not. If a player is eligible academically and they're enrolled at the college, they should be eligible to play for that team. Now, being eligible and whether that is in the best interest of that player is probably a different argument. A high school football player graduating from high school in December and enrolling at his college of choice in January It depends on when you want to start that college football season. If you want to do what CIF is doing and start the college football season in January and have it roll into April, that's going to be pretty difficult for a high school football player to be able to go right into a game week and basically have no equivalent to fall camp, have no acclimation period. They're basically just using the season to acclimate. That seems to put them at a disadvantage. And in terms of eligibility as a top high school recruit, would you want to be handicapped like that? Would you want to walk into a game week where they have game install and you're competing against college football players that have had a month plus to be able to prepare for the season when you didn't even have your senior high school football season? You're literally coming off the street and you haven't played for a whole year of football. That seems like a huge disadvantage. And while I can see these players being eligible, I just don't know if you're the NCAA, it's fair to them to throw them out there and have them waste a potential year trying to get them on the field at some point during midseason. Now, if you're pushing back the college football season to, let's say, March, then certainly they're going to have plenty of time to enroll in January, have a month or two to be able to acclimate and be able to go through a camp and then have a legitimate shot at being able to contribute, learn the offense or the defense, and be able to compete with those college football players for a spot. The next question comes from Gunnum, who says, Jim, love the rapid fire. Thanks for all you do and have done for the years. Appreciate you. Thank you very much, Gunnum. I appreciate you too. Shout out to the original OG of SoCal recruiting analyst for USC. That's you, GM. Well, thank you. You're showering me with praise and it's awkward and I don't know what to say, but thank you very much. Anyways, a short question. What's Mike Jinks' excuse? What's his excuse? What's his excuse for what, Gunnum? As in, how's the feedback coming in from running back recruits on how actively they are or are not being recruited by USC? Thanks. Mask up. Stay safe. Peace. Mike Jinks' name comes up in conversation with top running back recruits. USC's board is pretty limited right now in terms of top running back recruits, but his name comes up and usually those recruits mention him by name. And that's always the red flag. If a recruit is mentioning a position coach and names that coach just by the position. So for instance, yeah, I talk to the USC DB coach every other week, or yeah, I haven't heard from the USC DB coach in 3 months. He came down to my school and that's the last time we spoke. That's going to be a big red flag. And we've heard that in the past about certain position coaches at USC where they're not named by name and then maybe they're not in constant communication with those players. Players that you would assume they would be in weekly conversations with. Now, does Mike Jinks' name come up like it does with Dante Williams? Do kids go out of their way to talk about Mike Jinks? I don't think he necessarily makes that same impression with most kids. I haven't gotten that vibe from the running back prospects that I've spoken to, but his name does come up and it does seem like he's in constant communication with the top players that are on USC's board. I think if USC lands Byron Cardwell, the 6-foot, 195-pound four-star running back from San Diego, or another four-star running back in this class, I think a lot of those questions about Mike Jinks as a recruiter probably go away. And I also have to interject that Mike Jinks was responsible for landing both of those offensive tackles from Texas in the 2020 class. So he's not only recruiting running backs, he has been able to contribute to USC recruiting outside of his position. The next question comes from David Law, who says, thanks as always, GM. This is a big highlight of the week. Two queries. How are you reading the Corey Foreman tea leaves these days? And if there is no college football season until early 2021, which way do you think that pushes him? Or is it relevant? With Corona Centennial five-star defensive end slash outside linebacker Corey Foreman, I think there are days where he's all USC. And I think there are days where he's leaning to other schools. I think he gets on the phone with his buddy Mason Smith, five-star defensive tackle from Louisiana, and he's thinking about going to LSU. There are days where he gets off the phone with the Georgia coaching staff and to talk to Kirby Smart, and he's thinking about going to Georgia. Will the season or lack thereof help or hurt USC? It's tough to say. I think the lack of season, it actually probably does both. I think it hurts USC mainly because what Corey was looking for was player development from the new defensive staff. You're not going to be able to see that if there's no season. You're not going to be able to see how Drake Jackson develops as an outside linebacker in that jack or B-back position in Todd Orlando's tight front defense. A position, by the way, I think Corey Foreman fits much better at. At the same time, USC has done a pretty good job recruiting Corey Foreman to this point without a season. They've recruited him by projecting their scheme, by putting him in there and selling him on what could be. Not what has been, but what could be. Does that overcome the inability of Corey to evaluate the defense in person, to see up close what the defense looks like? I don't know. Now, on the flip side, if there is a season, it's obviously going to be a shortened season. USC is not going to have to play Alabama on the road, which I think is a good thing for recruiting. I don't think they would have beat Alabama. I don't think it would have been the blowout that we saw a couple years ago, but I don't think they were going to beat Alabama in the Jerry Dome. So you take that off the schedule. You take Notre Dame off the schedule. What you're really looking for is beating ASU and beating Oregon, which USC can do both of those things. Big Nick brought up a scenario earlier in the podcast where USC goes 9-1, they beat Oregon, and they go to a bowl game. I think in that scenario, USC signs Corey Foreman and probably a top five class. I think one of the worst case scenarios for USC and probably every other Pac-12 school is if the Pac-12 doesn't play football this season and the SEC does. If the Pac-12 doesn't play football and Georgia and LSU are playing football this season, Corey Foreman's going to the SEC. And he'll probably be followed by top recruits from other regions. Now, I don't see that happening. I'm doubtful that we'll see football this year, even at the pro level. But we're talking about scenarios, so you have to mention the worst case scenario where the Pac-12 is left not playing football and other conferences are playing football, specifically the SEC, because the SEC seems really hell-bent on trying to play this year. USC78 asks our next question. He says, any chance USC will try to quote-unquote recruit offensive line coach Pat Rhule as an analyst? I don't see USC doing that, and I don't see Pat Rhule necessarily being very interested in taking that type of position. I think he's probably pretty happy in retirement. He's got his tenure from the NFL. I think he just wants to ride his bike up and down the pier at Hermosa Beach. The next question comes from Big Jim Trojan, who asks, hey Jim, with California high school football moved to spring, do you see Troy Franklin enrolling early at Oregon or waiting it out? Are we even more out of his recruitment aside from not being in his top five or whatever? I haven't heard anything lately on Troy Franklin as to his decision, whether he's going to play his high school football season or he's going to enroll early. I would assume he's going to enroll early. The players that are waiting it out, that want to play the high school football season, are usually on pretty good teams. You're talking about your modern days, your Oaks Christians of the world, not your Menlo Parks. So I would assume that he's going to forgo his senior season and he's going to enroll straight into Oregon. The next question comes from Alex USC6, who asks, is SC recruiting Malcolm Johnson Jr., the wide receiver from Virginia? USC is recruiting Malcolm Johnson Jr., the 6'1", 180-pound, 4-star wide receiver from Alexandria, Virginia. USC just recently made his top 7, although from what I'm hearing, they're probably on the outside looking in of his top 2 or 3. The next question comes from Trojan Bama Born, who says, hey Jim, love the rant, keep it up. Is the verbal commitment that you hinted at decommitting a DB? No comment. We talk about very high-rated guys not being able to increase their ranking through the season. Can you elaborate on other guys that this hurts the most, like late bloomers and new to football players? It's kind of stating the obvious, but it hurts the players that are trying to get scholarships, that are trying to get rated by the recruiting publications, more than it hurts the players that already have scholarships. Rankings are really inconsequential. If you have multiple letters of intent, that's what really matters to you as a recruit. There are players that don't have a lot of college options right now, and they were going to use the offseason and the summertime to be able to build up their resume and get in front of college coaches. They didn't get that, plus they may not get a high school football season. And that is very difficult for colleges because they're going to have to take some waivers on some guys and make some guesses off of junior film. And it's very difficult for those players that have the ability to progress and develop from their junior years to their senior years. I remember a coach at USC, one of the recruiting coordinators, talked about not wanting to recruit the best high school football juniors in America and the best high school football sophomores in America. They wanted to recruit the best high school seniors. You wanted to see the very best at the very end from those players because that was the group that was going to be able to come in and probably make the immediate impact. Recruiting the best high school football sophomores, there's 2 years between being a sophomore and getting to college. What happens to that player? Does he peak? He's really good as a sophomore? You're recruiting a kid because he's a really good sophomore in high school? No, you want to recruit a kid. He's a really good senior high school football player. We're not really going to get that this year. Our next question comes from Gasiak, who asks, what is the difference between an unofficial and an official visit? How much weight can an official hold? Well, simply put, an official visit, the university pays for room, board, and travel for a recruit, and that recruit's parent or guardian for 48 hours. All expenses paid. With an unofficial visit, no expenses are paid. Official visits obviously hold more weight because not only are you able to give tours on campus, wine and dine a recruit, but you're able to do it off campus as well. So while you have the same type of team meetings and they get to hang out with coaches, they get to talk to various different department staff members, deans of various different educational programs that those recruits may be interested in studying, they get to get off campus and get to see the city. Now, there's a certain distance that you have to stay within the campus of the university that you're visiting for an official visit. But with SC, obviously that's an advantage because you don't have to go very far from USC and see a ton of sites. Official visits definitely emphasize lifestyle a bit more than your unofficial visit, where you're just meeting with the football coaches in the football office and maybe catching a practice or just touring the university kind of superficially. The next question comes from Jacob Stein. Comes in with the second question asking, if USC doesn't land Loyola cornerback Sierra Wright, are we in a better position for Isaiah Johnson or Clinton Burton Jr.? I did see Johnson was crystal balled to ASU. Are there other uncommitted defensive backs that have mutual interest? Thank you. I think the biggest name on that list that's uncommitted is Nathaniel Wiggins, the 6'2", 170-pound cornerback from Atlanta, Georgia. USC is still recruiting him. He is still considering USC. We just had a report on the Peristyle this week that USC may be in a better position for Nathaniel Wiggins than a lot of people give them credit for. We've been hearing about LSU and Florida, but it sounds like USC may not be completely out of that race. But if they're not able to land Wiggins or Wright, I think between Johnson and Burton, probably Johnson. Now, Isaiah Johnson did get some crystal ball picks to ASU. We talked about that at the beginning of the podcast. There are some legit sources that say that he gave ASU a silent commitment. Now, silent commitments don't mean much, but he is expected to probably commit sometime in August, which is just, you know, a couple days away here. So even if Isaiah Johnson was to verbally commit to ASU in the next few weeks, I still think USC would have a shot at landing him. He's local, and he's being recruited by Dante Williams, and Dante Williams tends to get his guys. David Law has our next question. Second page, new question. Recruiting always seems to have an ebb and flow, and at the moment, things seem positive, but a little stagnant in terms of commitments. What's your gut feeling about how things wind up, assuming no games in 2020? Not a predicted rank per se, but whether we'll be happy, sad, or just kind of meh about the recruiting haul. I don't have a crystal ball, so it's hard for me to try to project and forecast what the reaction of the fan base is going to be to a hypothetical recruiting class. I think there's a potential that there's a mixed bag. There's people that are meh. There's people angry because potentially Oregon can out-recruit USC, and USC should never be out-recruited locally or nationally by Oregon. And then there'll be people that are happy because there are going to be some good players in this class. The defensive back class is already good and is probably just going to get better. they're going to get some playmakers in the class, and it's definitely going to be a much, much better class than last year's class. The next question comes from SC Rules LA, who asks, next position coach to be removed and replaced by the AD. Interesting. Well, I don't know if Mike Bone has any coaching experience. Perhaps he can coach the defensive line or the offensive line. Oh, wait, is that not the question? Kind of seemed like the question. Of course, I'm kidding. I think if USC is making any moves to the assistant staff, then they're probably also going to make a move with the head coach. I don't think you're going to see assistants moving around like you saw this past offseason and a head coach staying in place. Clay Helton, this is his last staff. If he doesn't get it right with this staff, then I think USC is going to make a move. And then you'll see several new assistants. The next question comes from Best Lakers Fan. Rank your top five offensive and defensive recruits in the 2021 class, regardless of whether USC is or is not recruiting them. Well, I have not watched every recruit's film in the 2021 class, so it tends to revolve around what I've seen, and what I've seen is USC football targets. So I'd say offensively, running back Travion Henderson jumps out as one of the top players that I've seen on film this year. Amika Mbuka is still by far and away the top wide receiver that I've seen on film this year. I think there's a pretty big margin between he and the next guy. Another guy that comes to mind from Texas is JoJo Earl. I think JoJo Earl is a bit underrated. He's a small wide receiver, about 5'9", 165 pounds, but very dynamic, very fast, very explosive in the open field. One of the best quarterback recruits that I've seen is Michigan commit J.J. McCarthy. I think overall, watching film of all the different quarterbacks, I think J.J. McCarthy had the best film that I've seen in the 2021 class. On defense, J.T. Tuimoloau would be there. I think Ethan Calvert might actually be in that top five. I think his film is excellent. I think he does a lot of great things from a lot of different positions, and having seen that he's played safety, he's played outside linebacker, and now he's projected to play inside linebacker, I think that's a really good fit for him. And you can see that he's not only got the film and the resume, but potential upside with that move to the inside linebacker position. Corey Foreman would be there, although Corey Foreman, I think, does have a little bit more to prove. I think he had some ups and downs last season, but hasn't necessarily put together a long stretch of dominant football. And so I'd like to see him maybe take on those double teams and triple teams and maybe be able to do a little more in those situations. Nylon Green is another player that comes to mind on the defensive side of the ball. I liked him really early on when he was a three-star out of Georgia, 6'2", almost 6'3", 185-pound cornerback. And Shamel Mondin is another player at linebacker that's really good. If you watch his film, what really stands out with him, he's one of those players, kind of like a Chris Claiborne, that's really dominant at running back. Some of his running back clips are very impressive, and you're talking about, you know, a 6'3", 215-pound, 220-pound linebacker that's outrunning the defense in the secondary. The next question comes from Joan, who asks, hi, Gerard. I'm curious what the difference is between 24/7 sports rankings and the ESPN 300 rankings. Thanks. By differences, I guess you mean how the rankings are sorted and compiled. I don't really know the process that ESPN uses. I know that ESPN has a lot less eyes and ears at a lot less events, and so they tend to be a bit out of touch in certain regions. Certainly with the West Coast region, we've seen their rankings to be really very inaccurate. So inaccurate that we stopped acknowledging the composite rankings in the target list just because they had clearly not seen certain players and ranked them very, very inaccurately. I would say with 24/7, you definitely have the most eyes and ears out in all regions. You have a lot of different experts that have probably the most experience combined of any network. And I think it's just a matter of a lot of different opinions coming to the table. Now, that's not to say that 24/7 doesn't get things wrong or 24/7 has this monopoly on wisdom when it comes to the recruiting process and recruiting rankings. But there's definitely a lot of experience there, and there's a lot more in terms of in-person evaluations that have done by 24/7 Sports. The next question comes from Jeff Trojan Theft 2, who is another OG peristyler. Jeff goes way back. Doesn't post a lot anymore, but he goes way back. I see you, Jeff. Hello, GM. Any word on how Jake Garcia performed at the quarterback camp in Indianapolis? You know, Steve Wiltfong, I think, is going to have a write-up fairly soon on Jake Garcia. I wasn't there. I didn't really follow how well he did. Wiltfong will, I'm sure, have some type of breakdown of Garcia at that quarterback collective camp in Indianapolis. He asks, what current position is USC lacking in depth that will need to be addressed in the 2021 class? Thank you. Depth-wise, USC needs a third quarterback. That's a scholarship Division I level quarterback. USC needs offensive tackles. USC needs two running backs in this class. And it looks like USC is probably going to need two tight ends in this class. I would say those are the need positions to focus on, although you could probably add safety in there as well if Talanoa Hufanga and Isaiah Polamalu leave early to the NFL. Now, don't ask me how junior defections to the NFL are going to work when you don't have a junior season to actually grade players on. The NFL is going to have the same issue that colleges are having, not having that year where you would normally be able to evaluate players that are going to make that transition to the next level. The next question comes from Chris Pepega-Trevino, who says, I'm fond of coach speak that describes a player as, quote unquote, the guy you'd want to have your back in a dark alley. Ooh, scary stuff. Gerard, who are the three prospects you've covered in your lifetime that you would literally want in your corner in your back alley brawl? This one's easy. The three guys that have concealed carry permits. Is that a good answer? I think that's a good answer. But if this is the outsiders and there's no knives and no guns, then I'm going with Ray Maluga. I'm going with Stanley Havili, and I'm going to make it a poly trio and go with Fred Matua. RIP, big fella. The final question of this podcast comes from R.S. Schindler, who says, hey, GM, I'd like to follow up on a question I asked you a few weeks ago on the Holiday Bowl loss to Iowa. In your analysis, you made two key points. Number one, the offensive game plan was completely one-dimensional. And number two, USC's defense was exploited and abused off tackle and around the edges by Iowa, as they had been all year. Can you please provide more detail regarding point number one? As always, your observations are insightful and edifying. Well, USC had no running game. USC had their three top running backs injured, Vi Malapai, Stephen Carr, and Marquis Stepp. They could not run the ball in the red zone, which was a huge issue for them. Anytime they got close to the red zone, they really had trouble being able to run the football, and they had trouble running the football on short yardage. So they just started passing the ball. And because you don't have much in the way of play action, and you don't have much in the way of misdirection, Keaton Slovis is not going to run the ball on that mesh read. Iowa was able to kind of pin their ears back. I think when you look at Austin Jackson and the job that he did against defensive end A.J. Epenesa, I think it was a little bit of an underrated performance by Austin Jackson, considering that the Iowa defenders were just pinning their ears back and they knew that USC was really trying to pass the ball and they really didn't have any kind of running game and they really had no kind of misdirection. It was pretty much try to meet at the offensive backfield. That's going to do it for this week's Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez. You can follow me at GMART Live on Twitter or always reach out to me with follow-up questions on the Peristyle. Thank you to all our subscribers who participated in the podcast this week. And as usual, stay tuned to USCFootball.com for the best in USC athletics and recruiting.